We're back here with Cambridge Inside Out, part two for this evening. All right. So again, I was just recapping a little bit about recent city council actions or proposals having to do with purchasing of properties and certainly the rather controversial Gaza order. Maybe I'll say one other thing about the foreign policy matter is I think really because of the that resolution having to do with the Middle East situation, there was a city council order was introduced calling on basically just wanting to refer the matter of city council foreign policy resolutions to the Government Operations Committee for further discussion, as to sort of say, well, should we really be doing, I mean, presumably it's to ask the question, should we be doing this? Or if we are going to be doing this, how shall we conduct ourselves in doing such matters? And the matter was made subject to the charter right by former Mayor Siddiqui. So I don't really quite understand that, quite honestly, because the charter right is supposed to be for matters that are kind of sprung on a city council or any elected body in Massachusetts. And it's really kind of a little piece of Robert's Rules of Order as well. It basically says if somebody basically does a surprise order or a surprise resolution and nobody had any wind of it, then they always have the right to basically put it on the calendar without discussion and delay it until the next regular meeting. So it's really supposed to be for surprises. This was not a surprise order. So why are you on your like exercise your charter right when all you're really doing is saying we should have a discussion about whether we should be doing these things? It's not controversial at all. So anyway, that'll come up on the agenda at the next city council meeting, which I guess would be on February 12th, I believe. Another item that comes on the agenda, it's really the only one that's currently posted, is that the Charter Review Committee completed its work and finalized its report. I mean, there's going to be believe me, I'm going to have a lot to say about this in the coming months. And then that's actually now publicly available and posted. It has all the meeting minutes from all the meetings. It's kind of a hard document to read because they did not come to a conclusion about the basic form of government that they're recommending. And there is a big difference between a city council, city manager form of government versus a strong mayor, though they seem to not want to use the term strong mayor because I don't know, maybe it's a little too macho or something. But anyway, the strong mayor form that it was also proposed by about half of the committee. Half of, basically, if it was an even number of men, there were 15 members, so there were 8 people wanted one, 7 wanted the other. So what they forwarded to the council was basically 2 different charters. And both of them are just draft suggestions anyway. City Council can take or leave any piece of this, but they had to format it as 2 completely separate documents because, if you're the fundamental question about whether you're going to have a city manager or form of government, then informs so much of the rest of the charter that you can't just sort of have it be one sort of replaceable clause. It's sort of kind of the big kahuna there, right? And similarly, if you were to choose a strong mayor form, then that changes a lot of other things as well. So it's basically they have 2 different versions of proposed possible charters in there. But and I know I may have spoken about this at the last meeting here, but just to kind of emphasize here a little bit about this that the matter of the city charter, which I presumably, so it'll be arriving at the city council next week officially, presumably will be referred to the Government Operations Committee. I think, whether that will convene as a committee of the whole, all 9 members of the council, or as the regular 5 members who are appointed members to that committee, I don't know that yet. Will there be any public further public involvement? Because Lord knows there wasn't a hell of a lot of public involvement in the Charter Review Committee. That was about as exclusionary a process as I've ever seen in this city. You know, just acting in isolation with occasional calls for public input. But honestly, when every single meeting is in Zoom and the public just gets to basically chime in at the beginning of a meeting and then said, go away, us 15 brilliant people will make all the decisions. That's not a very good public process, in my view. But in addition to the question about manager versus strong mayor, and again, I may have mentioned this last time, there's also proposals to change to lower the voting age to 16. I'm probably going to sound like a classic conservative because I honestly don't find myself agreeing with many of these proposals, but they want to lower it to 16. My feeling about, let me just go point by point. My feeling about, basic feeling about that is that if you want to lower the vote to 16, you should do it across the state or don't do it at all. To me, I think it's a ridiculous situation where you have different voting ages in different cities and different towns throughout a single state. So, you know, you want to bring it up to the state legislature and entertain the possibility of dropping voting age to 17 or 16, go right ahead. But federal elections are going to remain at 18. And as far as I'm concerned, uniformity in elections process is really the right way to be. And so I just don't think that's a very good idea. By the way, there were some people who seriously thought they should lower the voting age to like 14 or 12 or something like ridiculous like that too. So there's also a proposal which is potentially controversial to allow non-citizens to vote. There was a time years ago when you could have convinced me that that would have been okay for school committee elections, but I'm going to now go with the same uniformity principle, which is that I don't want to see one city have non-citizens voting and the next town over have a prohibition against it. And I'm very aware of the fact that historically, you know, 100 something years ago, there were situations where non-citizens could vote, but it's been a pretty solid tradition for a long, long time of not having citizenship was a prerequisite to voting. And until somebody makes an incredibly strong case to change that, I'm not convinced that that's a good idea. Another proposal, which I also disagree with, again, I'm just being a naysayer here, I guess, is there's a proposal they wanted to move the elections from odd years to even years under the, I think, rather nonsensical notion that, well, don't you know that'll increase voter turnout, and voter turnout is really what it's all about. My feeling about that is that, you know, if people who only vote currently only want to vote for state elections and national elections, and you say, okay, we're going to put a city council election on there, you're going to get a lot of very non-serious voters just sort of voting almost randomly. Or even worse, you're going to have city council candidates deciding that they're going to have to run on national issues now in order to run for a municipal election, because that's how you get the attention of people who are more concerned about voting for national, you know, federal elections, presidential elections, and such. So I don't know that that's really, there's any great wisdom in switching from odd years to even years. All across Massachusetts, the tradition, except for towns that do even year springtime elections, usually terribly low voter turnout elections, I might add. The standard across this Massachusetts is that you have the odd years are for the municipal local elections, and the even years are for the state and federal elections. I think that's a system that works pretty well. It also makes things very much more streamlined for elections officials all across the state. Now, and again, just to sort of show you the ridiculousness of it all, you know, if you were, for example, to somehow prevail and have non-citizen voting or 16-year-old voting, then in municipal election, if you had municipal elections in even years, you'd have a situation where some voters would show up and they could vote for city council and president. And other people would say, no, you can only vote in the president election here. And so now you're putting a tremendous burden on all the elections officials to be able to sort of, you know, pass people through a filter like, okay, you got to go in this line versus that line because you're allowed to do this, but you're not allowed to do this. And I just think this is needlessly complicated, and it's just no value added, really, as far as I'm concerned. One of the proposals that I, kind of urged people on that committee to do was, and they just, honestly, they just don't seem to understand much about elections. So whether they were actually including it or not, I don't know for sure, but was just to allow the Cambridge Election Commission just a tiny bit more flexibility in how to do things like surplus distribution. Right now, we're restricted to methods that were in existence somewhere in the United States in the year 1938. But, again, the Cambridge Election Commission has the authority to choose different methods, but they only out of a very small basket of options that were in effect in, 90 years ago, right? So modern elections, if you were to institute ranked choice voting elsewhere or proportional representation elsewhere, would use some slightly different method that would be independent of ballot order. And I just think that would be a really good thing for us so that we wouldn't have to worry about the order in which you counted ballots, which, believe me, as the guy everybody asks to explain Cambridge elections, that's the hardest thing to explain because it's not really a very good thing, So you always have to, it's almost, you always have to explain it like with an apology. So I would like to be non-apologetic about talking about proportional representation elections. And the only way to do that is to give the Election Commission a little bit more flexibility in that small modification of the system. So that's a good thing. And finally, the last of the major items, there are a few other things that are in the proposal beyond just, making things gender neutral and all that stuff. But it's has to do with creation of what they called citizen assemblies. And I actually like the idea of having greater public involvement, but what they, the proposal they seem to have been floated, and maybe their last meeting, which I did not attend, maybe they modify this ever so slightly. It did not at all sound like, it basically sounded like as if the current elected officials were somehow going to choose who could serve on citizen committees, where they use some sort of demographic methodology in order to create a what they would decide as a representative body. And of course, what constitutes representativeness would most likely be based on skin these days, as opposed skin and gender as opposed to points of view or geographic representation from various parts of the city. So I just think there, unless they do something very, very carefully, they're going to be asking for trouble in the way that this is currently constituted. That said, I would love to see every ward in the city have like something, or multiple wards, perhaps grouped together, acting kind of like the old-fashioned ward committees existed back before Plan E, where you could actually have good ideas bubbling up from people, with some degree of self-selection. You would rerun to be on the ward committee, and then, once you're in there, then you would be a participant, but nothing you would do would be binding to anyone. It would basically just be a way of producing ideas and then making proposals that would then go in front of the city council, and hopefully, preferably, they would then be forced to take a position based on these ideas. Like, we like it, we don't like it, we want to forward it, we want to modify it, do that. But, right now, I'll give you just another example of dysfunction. So today, I didn't go, I thought about going, but I was, trying to think about this show. And there was a meeting of the Economic Development and University Relations Committee talking about, things having to do with, city squares and corridors and things to, ground floor retail and, kind of making things better. And I thought to myself, well, wait a minute. I'm on the Central Square Advisory Committee. There's also a Harvard Square Advisory Committee. There are various other groups, official and unofficial, that are associated with various squares. Were any of the people who are part of these advisory committees invited to take part in a city council subcommittee meeting having to do with what, in fact, these advisory committees are all about? The answer is no, they weren't invited. We got no invitation at all. So this notion somehow that it's a good thing to get public involvement, I could have gone to this meeting, any member of the public could have gone to this meeting, but you would think that maybe we should be integrating some of our citizen boards with some of our city council committees when it comes to talking about matters of mutual concern. But no invitation at all. So that's a dysfunction as far as I'm concerned. Citizen assemblies is maybe one way to address some of this dysfunction, come up with something that's maybe a little bit better. It's really hard to say, but anyway, it's going to be an interesting process as the city council deliberates on what to do with these various recommendations. And I want to emphasize, they are nothing but recommendations from the Charter Review Committee. And the city council actually has the authority to chuck them all and just basically make up their own. So the entire report fundamentally is a lot of suggestions, and we'll see how people feel about it. There is a kind of a philosophy or generally a statement that better the devil, as the phrase goes. So if you happen to be an elected official who is elected under proportional representation, chances are you want to keep proportional representation because that's what got you elected. If you were elected in an all at large system, as opposed to having ward counselors, then chances are you don't want to go to ward counselors because maybe you won't be elected under that system, right? So there tends to be a tendency to reinforce that which serves your own best interests. My own personal feeling is that there was a fair amount of bias in the selection of the Charter Review Committee in favor of certain city councilors who wanted to have a strong mayor because one or two city councilors thought that that would be a better route to becoming mayor and staying mayor, maybe mayor for life, if you had a strong mayor system as opposed to the system we usually do, which they tend to rotate over time. I personally like that. Every mayor has a different take on things. The mayor doesn't have great power, so it's really more a matter of influence. And I kind of like the idea of rotating through people and passing the influence around a little bit. And I will say, by the way, I'm very happy to get that Denise Simmons is mayor because I think she sort of runs a good ship and knows what to do. So, and I could go in several directions here, but one of the things, maybe I want to just speak kind of generally here. I mean, I could do a little ballot analysis, and maybe if there's a few minutes left at the end, I will. But somebody's just to say something about what, we're just sort of outside looking in at when I look at City Hall right now. The City Council, I think, wisely placed on file most of the items that were awaiting report that had been, there's this gigantic list of just ideas that had been floated. And some people objected to the idea that those would just be sort of set aside because don't you know that, we ought to be working on all of those things. And my feeling about that was no, maybe it's a good idea. And the city manager said as much, maybe it would be a better idea if you all got together and started prioritizing things and say, what do you really want? And rather than just throw these little drive-by orders with a good idea here or a big idea or an expensive idea there, and actually try and prioritize things and try and put them all into some sort of coherent framework. So right now we have virtually nothing on the awaiting report. And the city council committees, which were appointed, and actually maybe I'll speak to the appointment process here just a little bit. All right, so pardon me as I kind of try and navigate my way back to where I want to be here. But the city council committees, which I think I have right here, they were appointed by Denise Simmons. The mayor always does these. And the ordinance committee is now to be chaired by Mark McGovern and Paul Toner. The Finance Committee was Patty Nolan and Joan Pickett, which, by the way, in terms of I think people who are oriented toward budgets and that kind of way of looking at the world, I think those are both good choices, really good choices. Government operations, or really it's government operations, rules and claims, is chaired by Paul Toner. I thought that was an excellent choice. It's really the only great choice that could have been made for that one. Housing Committee, again, two strong advocates for affordable housing are Burhan Azim and Sumbul Siddiqui, and then also McGovern, Sabrina Willen Wilson. So it looks to me like the Housing Committee is going to be pretty one-sided this time around, pretty much going for more and more subsidized housing, and maybe even talking about things like rent stabilization, rent control, all the usual things that Cambridge hasn't really been stressing so much lately, but maybe they'll do that. I mean, I'm just trying to do a little crystal balling to kind of understand what might emerge, what's in store for 2024, right? Economic Development Unity Relations, chaired by Paul Toner. Human Services, once again, chaired by Mark McGovern, but also with Aisha Wilson. Health and Environment, again, chaired by Patty Nolan. No surprise there. Neighborhood and Long-Term Planning, chaired by Joan Pickett and Sabrina Wheeler. I totally understand the Joan Pickett choice. She was, after all, one of the main players with the Mid-Cambridge Neighborhood Association. Not so sure that Councillor Sabrina Wheeler actually believes in neighborhoods so much as citywide policies regarding a lot of things. But we'll see how that goes. One choice which was viewed as controversial by some was the appointment of Joan Pickett as chair of the Transportation and Public Utilities Committee. Controversial only because she had been involved in some opposition to some of the current quick build bike lane business. And at least I think there's some indication that there'll be a little bit of revisitation of some of that. Civic Unity, usually it's chaired by Denise Simmons, but the mayor doesn't usually serve except as an ex officio member of city council committees, but she appointed herself again as co-chair along with Joan Pickett to Civic Unity. It's just an interesting choice. I would love to see the Civic Unity Committee actually focus on civic unity as opposed to civic disunity, which seems to have been the trend in more recent years. Public Safety, thank God, Councillor Zondervan is out of here now. And so can no longer be appointed to the Public Safety Committee. But Paul Toner and Aisha Wilson, excellent choices to be co-chairs of the Public Safety Committee. Again, Family Policy Council is usually not viewed as a city council committee. I'm not quite sure why it's in the list here. But then again, the delineation of all these various committees is actually part of the city council rules. And there is actually a special committee on rules chaired by Paul Toner, where they'll be look at the rules and maybe they'll redefine some of the committees. We'll have to see. It's kind of hard to say. So anyway, I thought by and large, the committee assignments were actually pretty well done. I mean, I always think there's actually a Grimm's fairy tale called The Mouse, the Bird, and the Sausage, all about when people are assigned to the wrong roles, right? It's actually a great story. Just a two or three pager. And I often think about that when it comes to city council committees because, you can make incredibly wrong choices, like putting a Zondervan as chair of public safety for committee or somebody who was absolutely had no sense of money and making them chair of the finance committee, right? I mean, I've seen strange things happen based on pure politics, quite honestly, but by and large, I'm actually pretty okay with these ones right here. So again, where do I think we're going to be going as this year unfolds? Because right now the only city council committees that have actually scheduled meetings were the Economic Development and University Relations one. Had one today, going to have another one next week. But the other ones, nope, they're just still kind of, treading water and probably figure out a day when they can all get together. So I would say this is a city council that is, quote, finding itself right now. I suspect, and it may be controversial, that there may be some movement on the sort of monolithic view about quick-build bicycle, separated bicycle lanes. I mean, safer bicycle infrastructure is not going away, nor should it. But some of the idiocy that has taken place in some implementations, I think, is going to get some revisitation. And I hope so. We'll see about that. As I've mentioned a couple of times, we're starting to enter into a period where we're realizing we do not have an infinite amount of money to spend. My understanding is that the roundtable yesterday with the school committee, the issue came up because they had a contract, new contracts that basically kind of mean the school committee budget, which is the biggest single budget, I think, in the city, is going to jump up, which means you either have to raise taxes or you have to, reallocate money or maybe delay some things. Anyway, this to me is a healthy discussion. This is not a bad thing, that people actually have to think about the value of everything. The question about the shifting tax burden, I think, is a serious matter that's going to certainly come around. So that's just a little bit of a sampler. I suspect, I mean, when Cambridge is not like Somerville. Somerville got kind of run over by the socialists. I don't see Cambridge as being quite so crazy that way, but there's agenda-laden councillors who are going to sort of try and, put us to the bleeding edge of whatever agenda you can imagine, and I can only hope that a little bit of moderation will prevail as the year unfolds. I mean, this past year a lot of it was about the Budo-related stuff. We'll see. I mean, there's smart ideas, and then there's unreasonable mandates, and the socialists tend to like unreasonable mandates all the time. One relatively minor thing, and then I think we'll sort of call it quits, is City Council is going to have to find some way to better manage their public meetings. First off, we should not be doing things primarily in Zoom. I think it's just ridiculous that planning board and various other meetings are taking primarily in remotely now. Those are not real public meetings. Public meetings are meetings where human beings can actually get together and talk to each other on the side and meet and plan things and do that. Keeping the public so isolated, this is not a really good thing. A more immediate problem is the crazy protesters from the Party for Socialism and Liberation who busted up all the meetings. I don't think they're really going away, even though they got their little Gaza resolution. So what the city council does in terms of rules to manage that problem, that's something they're going to have to address right away. So anyway, on that note, I think I'm going to wind it down here right now. So thanks again for listening, and we'll see you again soon on Cambridge Inside Out.